Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had to taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, 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 oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone, thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh, oh.
Allows us to explore our dark sides and find our way to the light. I celebrate people who, like the founder of the show, recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person, share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength, capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders, deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets After Midnight on Blog Talk Radio, and we are part of allpoetry.com. So if you're not in the group, you can still participate, but if you are in the group, it's more fun because you can follow along in the chat, make comments, enter the contests, and you can follow along and read with us as we read the poems. So check it out, allpoetry.com, Late Night Poets. I'm Aphasiana, and I have Babbler with me. Hi, Babbler. I think I do. Babbler. All right, she may be stuck on mute for a minute, but she's here. I can see her lurking. Now, this week we were writing to the quote, "The broken carry the broken, and the unloved love the unloved." That's survival. Bleeding hearts holding broken hands. We hold on, shaken, standing, strong, and unshakable. That is survival. That was from Uncommon Graces. And that inspired the contest. So the poetry that we're going to read tonight was inspired by that. And Babbler will be with us in just a moment. There was a disconnect in technology, as there tends to be. So here we go. I'm going to actually play our first audio, which is by Poetic Picasso, also known as Frank, who I see is on the board listening. So hello, Frank. We're going to start with you, although actually I see Babbler again. Babbler, are you with us this time?
Can you hear me now?
I hear you.
I wasn't on mute on my end, so I have no idea. So I just hung up and called back.
That's always the trick, you know. You go, did you turn it off and on again? It's the IT guy's joke, but it's true. It's usually
yep.
the easiest solution, just restart. How are you doing today?
I'm really tired. I've been working doubles for, I'm not even sure how long now. I think I'm going on like week three, but February 3rd is my last double.
I don't know how you do that. I can't even properly do a single, to be honest with you.
So. Yeah, well, I'm getting tired. So, but, yay, COVID. How are you doing?
All right. I think I hurt myself shoveling last week because, like, my whole right side of my body hurts, but I can't, like, there's no specific, like, thing that happened that makes sense, but it's just, like, all of my muscles are not happy with me on my one side. I'm feeling a little uneven. I'm sure I'm walking funny.
Crab walking.
I mean, let's be honest, I always do.
So where were you before I had to call back in?
Ah, yes. I was about to play the poem by Frank. Here we go, by Poetic Picasso.
From the broken pieces of your heart I'll build you a shrine. Make a fountain by the candles to quench your thirst. Walk the road barefoot to you, my sacred pilgrimage, leaving behind footprints in the sands of time. Upon the parchments of the naked secrets, I find your purity and the luminescent afterglow. You are the radiance of the morning sun, your lips the cool drops of an evening rain. I can feel the burden beating of your lonely heart as you bleed in the pool of your bitter laments. But I see the bright light of your ebony glow like a luminary in the mirror of a lover's fate. I pay homage to the sea with your celestial beauty, for I am the strength of your rock of Gibraltar. I'll tear down the pillars of your walls of Jericho if you let me be the builder of your dreams, mi amor.
Wonderful piece, Frank. Nope. Sorry. Didn't mean to talk over the end. I really enjoyed this piece. Just the idea of something broken, not just being like shards and bits, but to build, to making a fortress, you know. the brokenness is almost like an impermeability as a result of, you know, heartache, a result of being hurt. I could really like that as a concept, you know, and then someone to have someone come along and make you into a shrine, you know, to undo the defenses, essentially, to build dreams. I thought was a really great concept. So I absolutely love especially that last stanza. You know, for I am the strength of the rock of your rock of Gibraltar. I'll tear down the pillars of your walls of Jericho if you let me be the builder of your dreams. I just thought that was really beautiful because it's so often true. You know, pain doesn't just shatter a person. It also more defensive. It makes it harder to reach the softer side of people, the more hardness that they've encountered in their life. So I really thought this was beautiful. The imagery was gorgeous too, you know, upon the parchments of naked secrets, you know, just the image of like, you know, nudity with the color of parchment, you know, made out of like a skin, but like something that you can write upon, I thought was really beautiful. You know, and the idea of like your lips, the cool drops of an evening rain also had a really wonderfully like refreshing imagery to it. I thought it was a very romantic and beautiful piece. So wonderful, right, Bronk? What did you think of Feziana?
I agree. It's such a beautiful romantic piece. In the second stanza, I really liked the parchment of the naked secrets. And then the words like luminescent just really emphasize that radiance that he says in the next line. And that lips part that you pointed out, your lips, the cool drops of an evening rain, that is such a beautiful image. It makes you feel the lips as well as see them. The part at the end, if you let me be the builder of your dreams, that is the most powerful part in my mind because it's like the support of someone who will help you with your dreams is amazing. And then with the rock of Gibraltar, I couldn't remember what that was, so I looked it up. And for those of you who may be drawing a blank like I did, it is a monolithic limestone that's located in British territory of Gibraltar. I can't even say it. It has a nature reserve that has macaws. So that's pretty cool. Very cool. And to be someone's rock of Gibraltar is such a strong statement. So very well done, Frank.
Excellent. Wonderful comments. Where are we off to next?
Now we have one by Adrian 41062. If you would read that for us.
Absolutely. This is Stronger Together by Adrian 41062. In the depths of hurt and despair, just some kind words, a little prayer, broken hearts that seek repair, good deeds, listening ear, always there. In the middle of pain and tears, be the one to take away fears, healing words throughout the years, being there till darkness disappears. Through life's lessons, it's here we grow. Damaged souls will always know. Ebb and tides are just life's flow. Mending each other, our spirits glow. End poem. Heavenly, I like the way that the title, Stronger Together, really ties the piece into a neat little package. You know, just there can be a lot of hurt and horror in the world, and, you know, but having someone to talk to and someone to rely on and someone that you just know is going to be there goes a really long way in getting you through trauma. You know, just listening to your friends or listening to your family. So I think that the message of this piece is really good. You know, it has a very structured rhyme that's easy to pick out. But and I think in a way that the message is kind of easy too. So it's not like a deep contemplative piece. It's kind of a surface piece. But I think that when you're in a rough place and you need a poem like this, that can be helpful because you're not always like in a good place to like chew on words, if you know what I mean. So I really like it. I think it's a good inspirational piece. I mean, it's uplifting. So I thought it was a good write from Adrian. What did you think of Viviana?
Yeah, I liked it. I like be the one to take away fears. You know, when you're someone who has experienced those fears, you can take charge of it by being the one to take away that fear from someone else, to be that reassuring presence. I like that damaged souls will always know ebb and tides are just life's flow. So if you've been through that and you've seen how it gets better, then you know the way that it's flowing and you can maybe reassure people that, you know, this is temporary, that does get better, and use your own experience to show that. So I think that this is really well done, and it responds to the quote very well.
Excellent comment. Yeah, it is a nice tie into the quote. I think it parallels that nicely. What do we have up next?
We have one by Weaver of Dreams, and there's an audio for it. I'm just going to find that.
You're not invisible. I see you, but only just. You're fading fast. Where are you going? Stay. Tell me what's happened to bring you to this. Between now and nothing, nowhere and today. You're still here. You've delayed that final step. That's proof that you have hoped there's another way. I'm coming for you. I see you in the ether. Stop. Take my hand. I'll try too. Let's live another day. That light you see, soft, warm and welcoming, is wonderful. Our family's waiting there. But you're too young to leave, my little sister. My back is strong. I'll take you anywhere.
Excellent, right? I really loved this. The idea, you know, of it's like a consoling tone. Like there's something very comfortable and comforting in these words, coaxing someone off of the edge, you know, coaxing a little sister from the precipice of what sounds like, you know, suicide. And it's done so tenderly and so sweetly and with so much understanding, you know, to only barely see them and be like, tell me what's happened to you, you know, like talk to me, like, you know, and then the convincing of like, you're still here. Like you didn't rush into this. It's not something that you desperately want. So there's still some hope, like, you know, give it another try. Like we can do this together. I think there's just a really beautiful ethereal softness to this. It's almost like whispering to someone's spirit almost directly. I just found it very beautiful with the word choices and especially her reading. The reading was really wonderful, so I'm really glad we had a recording for this because I don't know that I would have picked up on that nice soft tone immediately. I do think the poem spells it out to you a little later, but it's nice to have it start like that, just directly. You know, that light you see, soft, warm, and welcoming, is wonderful. Our family's waiting there. Like, yes, where you're going is nice and where you're going is pleasant, but it's just not time yet. It's full of so much love and reassurance. Like, there's not a harsh word in here. So I thought this was a really beautiful and heartfelt piece. I really enjoyed it. So thank you, Weaver of Dreams. What did you think, Viviana?
I completely agree. I think there's a beautiful gentleness to this. When it says you're still here, you've delayed that final step, I kind of picture that the sister's on a ledge, like on a tall building about to step off, and that's probably metaphorical, that final step, but there's still, because there's this gentleness, it's like she is tiptoeing towards the sister, not rushing at her, not demanding she come down, but slowly going to her and offering her hand as a way to go in the other direction and to stay. I just thought that this whole poem felt like that, like reaching out your hand and offering that comfort, but not, you know, grabbing the sister's hand, just putting yourself within reach and being there. I thought that was such a perfect balance of, you know, stating that you're there, being present, recognizing that she is visible, you're not invisible, I see you, but only just to recognize that someone is fading away, but also remind them that, like, you're still worthy and important, I see you. I think that is such a huge thing to say to someone who's in that situation. So beautiful poem that's so full of empathy and love, Weaver of Dreams. This is just absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it is really gorgeous. I just think it's really well done. It's very soft and sweet without being overly saccharine. I think it's an excellent write.
Agreed.
What do we have up next?
I'm going to read one by Stephen T. Wellman. This is called Journey. The journey of a thousand poets begins on a raging river of salty tears. The saline streams surrender slowly. Glowing glass crystals flow fluidly. Chiseled cheeks clouded in morning mist. Sensitive sepia stimuli scratch the surface. Nostalgia nips the four corners of the mysterious mind's cosmic senses. Digging at the layered depths of a poet's hauntings, the things that stir the soul strangely slip through the complex conscience, bleeding soulful stirrings on lined parchment. Whimsical words levitate, broken expressions parachute, looking for a soft landing. Pain processes amongst the thorns. They prick the hurting heart. A bloody rose blooms. A nightingale grows wings, a powerful and beautiful song he sings. Freedom to soar on a page of white, one day the night will be no more, and the journey of a thousand poets will have reached a sandy shore, where the shining sun never sets, and a golden city never fades. End poem.
Excellent read, Faziana. I enjoyed this piece. I mean, the dive straight into, like, alliteration. You know, you get into it and you just instantly hear, chiseled cheeks clouded from morning mist, sensitive sepia stimuli scratch the surface. So, your mind just starts hitting on these letters. It's almost just like a drum beat to kind of introduce you to the piece, which I really liked. And then it kind of goes into a bit more on what's going on, you know, when very many times, not all the time, but many times, people write poetry because they hurt. They need to express their pain. They need to express their frustrations. And that there's something really satisfying about being able to use metaphors and other words and think about how you're feeling abstractly. And it's almost like having a conversation with yourself. So it's really, you know, at least I do that frequently to kind of process how I'm feeling. So I like that it kind of digs into the process, and it starts out talking about the difficult parts, all the different feelings that you can have, like bleeding soulful stirrings on lined parchment. I thought was such an interesting line. Whimsical words go up, they levitate, but I like broken expressions parachute, looking for a soft landing. So it's like even the lines that aren't great or the concepts that aren't fully fleshed out or the feelings that are negative, like, are still softened. A parachute isn't like plummeting to the ground ready to explode. It's kind of its own billowy floating kind of motion, which I really liked. I also really loved the line, pain processes amongst the thorns, because it's so true. The processing happens while you're still hurting. And sometimes the source of the pain is still ongoing while you're processing. I really thought that line in particular was a standout for me. But then it goes into like the hurting and the pain and that kind of thing, and then it talks about a nightingale grows wings, and the freedom of writing, freedom to soar on a page of white. One day the night will be no more, and the journey of 1,000 poets will have reached the sandy shore. Just like the completion of a healing process, the way that a writer can be there for themselves, where poetry can be there for them. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great piece. I thought it made use of a lot of different technical pieces of poetry, and I like that it has like a story to it. So I thought this was a nice write. What did you think, Abiziana?
Well, that's a hard comment to follow because I think you said it all. very eloquently. I agree. Everything you said felt so true. And I love that he made this about the journey of a poet. The idea of the broken, holding the broken as the poets kind of supporting each other. I mean, that's this website that we are a part of. This is the poets sharing their souls and being supported by each other. I see that so much. People helping with each other's writing, but also with their feelings and their lives. It's amazing the connection you see on these poets. So I think that's amazing. I really loved the line that you pointed out, pain processes amongst the thorns. And it is sometimes those most painful poems to write and share that are the ones that need to be shared. They are the ones that help you process and also the ones that help other people process. Sometimes those poems that hurt to get out are the ones that people need to hear. I think this is absolutely beautiful. It's well-crafted. Like you said, Babbler, the alliteration is incredible, and it's very striking. It's very noticeable, and yet I didn't find it distracting from the message. So it's really well done.
Yeah, agreed. I didn't feel like it detracted at all. I mean, it can, but I don't feel like it did. I felt like it was a little heavier in the beginning, but it almost felt like a lean-in, like almost kind of like raindrops, like perforating. I liked it. That was very well done. So where are we off to now?
There's one by Caitlin Assemi that I'm trying to put up, but my computer is not cooperating. So just one second. There. Could you read that one for us?
Absolutely. This is Three Fighters by Caitlin Esterny. You were there in my darkest hour, when all my fears and tears did tower. You promised to help me heal the cracks in my heart that were very real. If you had not been around, in my tears I would have drowned. We were there, you for me and I for you. Our friendship has always ringed true. When you were pulled to the ground and darkness fought to keep you down, My friend, I tried your tears to dry. But now, when many a dark shadow seek to wear our world, unshowing, untold, both I and you had to make two. Pulling, shaking, me and you, we fought to keep our friendship true. We now know that darkness, true fighters down. End poem. I thought this is a really interesting piece about, you know, friendship and the power of friends. I kind of liked that it was a bit of a twist because I expected after the third stanza, which starts with but, and usually when you start a sentence with but, it kind of negates all of the things that you've said before, you know, and the setup here is that, you know, we are really good friends that said that we would be here for each other, the thick and thin, no matter what. And then it says, but, and talks about that, you know, the world is an especially hard place and that things are going on and that we're having to make do. And yet that last stanza says, but we still friends, you know, we're still here, we're still standing. So I really liked that because it was a bit of a twist, but it's a positive twist, not like a, you know, and now we're not friends. So I thought that was interesting and a little bit unexpected, just based on word choices, but I thought it added dimension to the piece. You know, this has a rhyme scheme to it that sometimes feels a little bit wobbly, but I feel like that kind of leads into, you know, the difficulty of friendship. I feel like when stuff in the beginning is easy and working well, the rhyme is kind of solid. And then when you get into, like, the harder, more trial and tribulation part of the relationship, it gets a little wobblier, you know. Like, it's still there, but it's not, there's more off-rhyming, like now and shadow. You know, those aren't direct rhymes. It's not even really the same vowel sound. So, but it works, but it is wobbly. So I thought that was interesting because I thought there was a little bit of a playoff there. You know, just, and then like darkness and coldness, you know, aren't super tight rhymes, but they can work. So I thought this was a really interesting piece from Caitlin.
That's a really great observation about the rhyming and how it can represent how things go. Like, I did not even think about that, but I really like that. And you're right about when it had the but, I did kind of think there might be conflict between them. But I think what it's talking about is sometimes it's not as just one person picking up the other person. Like, there's a nice reciprocal relationship where one person was hurt, the friend took care of them, then when that friend was hurt, they took care of it, and then now, with the way the world is, they're both hurting, and they managed to stay up. They're pulling each other up, even as they both fall down together. So I think there is a shift, but it's not a shift against each other. It's just that there's not one strong one at all times. They just have to be both the one who's knocked down and the one who's helping up at the same time, which can be tricky, but I think that there I am with the butt. they have the strength. They're pulling, but they're still shaking, and they've managed to stay true through all of the cold. I think that is an incredible piece of strength and a true friendship that's being described.
I like that observation. Yeah, the clinging together, like the leaning on each other instead of the one at a time. I think that's a great observation. Fantastic comment. What do we have on the plate next?
It's going to be one by Jeff Curran. But my internet is super slow today, so I'm sorry. It'll be there in just a moment.
Mine too. It's just dragging. Like, my computer, I actually restarted it before I called in because it's going so slow, but I don't know why.
There was something about avalanches. I think maybe the lines are down in some places. Okay. I think I've got it now. Here it goes.
Walking on the tides. October morning, the anniversary effort only. A Jersey girl taking a walk in oblivion. Acid punk at her face, carving, deforming, contested, and she burned her inside out. Hoving things with feather, it's fine, being air monitor. Carrying a meal, two different shows. A shadow crossing a burning sand, from taking a silver part. She was awesome, going among bitter woods, patterns of singing. Here in the wilderness, strong, wearing away her wounds, under a beating chest, she the wounds of the singer, with tears, drinking out of the way of God. But sitting next to me, she seemed hung up in moving thoughts. Though she spoke from the heart, her mouth poured out an easy language. But to the winds, held to the stars, the world was in white, back. But made of universe taking many years, just for a second shell. It evolved her fasting woods, devoted to both moon and night, but unearthing a deadly silence. I pressed her hands and felt fresh mountains from touching finger wings. Sun distant past, as the gods lost her wings, as I see the memories, but you might. Thank you.
Okay, that was I don't know if it was just me, but I had trouble lining that up with the piece. I think that was in a different language. Am I correct?
No, but I do believe he has a speech impediment because of his illness. I think that is awesome that he's still making audios. So that's awesome.
No, I think that's great. I've had a hard time following, so I apologize.
That's all right. I can comment first if you want.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah. I liked the reference to Emily Dickinson in here. Hope is the thing with feather. I'm pretty sure she said hope is a thing with feathers. So he's referencing that. And the idea of it flying on the air, a wanderer, and that feather goes through and changes things is I don't know, that is such a hopeful image. Right after he's talking about acid flung in her face, and that so there's such contrast. You know, there's the carving, deforming contours. That is a harsh image, but even though her identity feels stripped, there is still that hope that gives a lightness. And then there's so much nature imagery in here that I think works really well. And I liked her mouth poured out an encrypted language. Multiple pens helped to color the scars. It's as if because of the what she's gone through, she needs to express herself in different ways. And nothing was black or white. It's all shades of gray, but also it's the shades of the rainbow. So nothing is clear, yes or no anymore. She now sees things differently. I thought this had a lot of depth to it.
Wonderful comment. You know, this is a beautiful piece. And I love what you said about the rainbows. Yeah, as I'm reading through, you know, just the story of a girl who's just joyful and afloat on the lake, you know, in the land of Wordsworth, you know, just in a beautiful place, who's then, you know, attacked by acid, and that just strips, you know, her identity, burned her inside out. You know, just to carve in and pull out you know, someone's entire identity. I thought the wording there was just really powerful. And that, like, hope is being the savior, you know, her shadow blocking the burning sun and tearing the soul apart. Again, it's just so harsh, but, you know, the violence of an acid attack just is violent, you know. But then the next stanza being, she was a blossom growing among bitter woods, petals of healing. So, you know, even post-attack, where, like, her whole world has been turned inside out and her identity questioned, there's still this healing. She's still the blossom. It's the woods that are bitter and not her, which I thought was a really beautiful sentiment, you know, and that she's just slowly healing, but not necessarily healing. Like, she isn't what's scarred. Like, she's physically scarred, but she's still, like, this purity, the way it's described, you know, her being the blossom. And then even in the next one, here in the wilderness, storms wearing away her bones, under her bleeding flesh, she healed the wounds of strangers with tears. You know, so again, like, the wound is external. It's internal, but it's inflicted externally. So I really love that this really separates the concept of the violence and the victim. It never paints the victim as the problem. It never, like, taints her with the violence. It's always painted as her still being the same as she was before. You know, having to process trauma, of course, but not, like, permanently damaged in a way, in, like, the essence of her being, which I really enjoyed that about this piece, because so many times when someone is attacked or victimized, you know, people try to avoid victim blaming, obviously, but there's also the victim wondering, you know, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm horrible, or, you know, this internalization of, like, did I deserve this? And so I appreciate that the poem kind of keeps them separate. That, you know, she's still the blossom, and she's still doing healing, and she's, you know, I really enjoyed that about this. And then I really enjoyed, too, you know, the she seemed hung up in moony thoughts, though she spoke from the heart. So, you know, she's still speaking from the heart, but her mind is kind of elsewhere. She's kind of lost touch with herself a little bit, which I thought was beautiful. And then, yeah, the new spectrum of seeing the world, you know, not in white or black, but rainbows of healing. I thought it was gorgeous as well. And then to hold her hand and just kind of be there and just kind of relate and to just kind of feel the pain. You know, I pressed her hands and felt fresh mountain snow gushing through my veins. Sun dips in glass, apricot clouds cover me as I steal your memories, but leaving mine. You know, to me, it's like, I want you to see how beautiful I still see you. You know, I want you to know that I don't just see the scars. I want you to see the beauty in you that I still see. I thought this was a really lovely piece, and I really loved the language used in it. Gorgeous. Wonderful write from Jasper Ann.
That was a great comment. Now we have one by Thomas B. So I'm going to read that one. It's called, Can You Hear the Ice Cry Against Spring's Arrival? I watched the willows dance against a breeze, remembered the moments when she spun, a tendril of willow tears about her, stared down at me, growled, became a stripper prancing, slipping in and out of the shadows, leaving the branch behind like a discarded boa. Love was laughter, touching, and dreams so big we could fly with them. She rocks in the living room, hums, suddenly gets up and dances to a song, 30 years old, and I try to catch before she falls. She has called the police twice to catch the prowler, called my name while she hit me. The tears I cried were not from being hit by her butterfly blows. I remember her catching our child, singing lullabies angels would gather to hear, cooking things up in the kitchen, her experiments we love to test, so quick with a compliment, so fast to change anyone's frown to a smile. I have heard everything the doctors have to say. I have read all the stories and know all the signs. My heart will never understand as she grows more frail, becomes a memory in her own flesh. I look on the garden and the first crocuses, see the willows by the river start to green, wonder how I will shake the taste of winter and all the sighs of family and friends. End poem.
This is a really lovely piece, and I love the circularity of it. You know, to start, first the title, you know, can you hear the ice cry against spring's rival? You know, the idea that winter laments the coming of spring, I think, is a beautiful concept, because so many people look forward to spring, you know, but what of winter? And then to start the piece off by saying, you know, I watched the willows dance against the breeze and instantly dip us into this memory of this woman dancing in the spring, you know, like, and being playful and being silly and just enjoying life. And it sounds like she was a big character and just very, I don't know, whimsical, you know. And then, you know, then it turns to, like, she rocks in the living room and gets up to dance, but now she falls. So you understand that she's aging. But then it turns into she's not just aging. Like, she's seeing things and she's calling for help. While attacking the person that she's calling for help, you know, and the tears I cried not from being hit by her butterfly blows. It was, you know, because you're losing someone as they lose themselves, a memory of time. You know, and then the reminiscence, so we went from, you know, the past to the present and a little bit back into the past again, you know, the things that you love about people. You know, she's losing her memories, but the narrator is not. You know, and that's painful about Alzheimer's and painful about dementia, is watching them forget everything one memory at a time. And memories are such, you know, they're part of yourself. Like, they're built kind of into who you are. And so to watch someone slowly lose themselves. And then that last stanza, you know, I've heard everything that the doctors have to say. Like, I know where it's going. Like, mentally, I'm prepared, but emotionally, I can't be. Like, there's no way to be emotionally prepared. And then we're brought back to that future, you know, that back to the beginning, looking at the crocuses and knowing that spring is on its way, and it's going to be the end of winter, you know, as the stand-in is. Allegory and metaphor for her life, you know, the loss of somebody and how hard that is, you know. So the time is moving on, but sometimes it takes a minute for the heart to catch up. So I thought this is a really beautiful piece, and a wonderful tribute and memory to a person, if the person is a real person. So this was a beautiful piece and a wonderful write. What did you think, Aziana?
It is a wonderful write, and it started off so vibrant and beautiful, and like I had like this kind of whimsical feeling of dancing in the garden with this woman who seemed incredible, and then to realize that she's losing herself, that that part where she's calling for him to come save her from him, not recognizing him, that is just so devastating. Like, as I was rereading it while you were commenting, I just, like, tears were in my eyes. I could taste my tears because I just, it's so intense to lose someone in that way. And especially, he says something about, like, within your body. Where is it? I lost it. But there's a part where he actually talks about, oh, here we go. Becomes a memory in her own flesh. So she's there, but yet she's just a memory because it feels like she's not her anymore. And there's just a whole other kind of grief with that. It's just so devastating, but written in a way that captures the experience, the beauty and the pain and the confusion and how wonderful this person was. That's just such a powerful piece. I'm blown away, Thomas B. This is such a great write. There is this picture book that I read recently with some kids who had grandparents who were going through this, and it's called The Remember Balloons by Jesse Oliveros, and the grandpa holds all these balloons, and he's like the keeper of the balloons for the family. But then you realize each of the balloons is like a story from their family's history. And as he gets sick, the balloons fly away, and all these memories and stories are lost. But once the little boy realizes that this is what's happening, and he gets mad because one of his stories flies away, and he's very upset, and then his dad says, you know, Grandpa can't help it. He can't hold on to those balloons anymore. And so the little boy starts listening to the story. He'll ask the grandpa about each of the balloons, and as he tells the story, the little boy takes hold of the balloon, and so he passes on the stories, and eventually he's the one telling the grandpa the stories, and it's just, oh, it was so emotional, and I feel like this poem takes it to a whole other level. As it's from a different perspective, it's not the little boy, it's the husband, I think, and just, oh, so powerful. Thomas, wonderful poem.
Yeah, wonderful, right? It's very emotive. You know, it's easy for the reader to step into the feeling. So I think that's the hallmark of a wonderful piece of writing. It's a great write from Thomas. Very touching.
Yes.
What do we have up next?
Now we have one by Naomi, and we have an audio for that.
Three tomatoes. The cat slanted her head to the side, gazing at me with sloshing half-asleep eyes. You know that way only cats can do it, letting out a long meow of, hey, what's your problem? With a tone of, oh, and I don't give a damn, mixed in. I was encrusted deep into the couch, drifting between caffeine and nicotine highs, and rushes of low in the pit, sorry for myself, like a whining kid that hadn't gotten that toy in a fit of frying bacon on some shopping mall floor. I picked up my cell phone once more, browsed through my message box, sighing. Nothing, nada, not one single new text. Oh, stop looking at me like that, I spat out. The cat just yawned and turned away to lick her behind. The doorbell jerked me out of myself, loathing. Now, who's that? Can't a girl pout in peace? I lifted myself off the couch, feeling so heavy, slowly dragging my annoyed feet to the door, swung it open, and was greeted by a grunted, hi. My next-door neighbor of 80 years gone stood there crouched over, wobbling on his cane. He pushed three tomatoes into my arms, mumbled a, here I have plenty, garden's overflowing. Oh, well, thank you so much, I gleamed. Yep, he muttered and turned to leave. You know, this is the best present ever, I exclaimed. Old Mr. Harold glanced back at me, surprised. Today just happens to be my birthday, I explained. Oh, well, happy birthday then, he grinned shyly, hugging those three tomatoes with a huge smile. I watched them slowly hobble away down the street. Oh, a happy day it was going to be indeed, I decided. As I ran inside, dug out the recipe for my chocolate fondue cake, humming as I pulled the ingredients out of my cupboards, Mr. Harold would have the finest dessert with his supper tonight.
That was a great recording. Thank you, Naomi. I really enjoyed this piece. It was so funny and so wry. Like, the humor in it felt very I Love Lucy, like that particular, like, Lucille brand of wry humor. Like, I could almost see it just acting out in front of my head. You know, you've got this cat and this person who themselves is being kind of a sourpuss because it's their birthday, although we don't know that it's the reader, right away. Just feeling very negatively about their day, you know, just feeling sorry for themselves, being crabby and looking at everything negatively. I particularly loved the line, in a fit of frying bacon on some shopping mall floor. The idea of a tantrum being like a piece of bacon frying was just wonderful imagery. Just the flailing and sizzling, and I could totally see the reminiscence of each other in the line. I thought it was great. And then, you know, just more of that sourpuss, just being mad at the cat because nobody emailed you to say happy birthday, and then they just stopped to lick their bum. You know, I thought it was great. You know, and then to be greeted by this neighbor who's just this old man who is rather brusquely gifting tomatoes. Like, he doesn't seem to really care that much. Like, here, I just have a bunch. I don't want them to rot. It's not like I care about you. It's just I have lots of tomatoes. Same time to completely change the perspective of the original narrator, you know, just that human interaction, just the small gift, even though incidental, even though he has absolutely no clue that it was her birthday. But she doesn't care because that's all she wanted. She just wanted the gift and the human interaction to then just be so absolutely chuffed to then go make an entire cake and feel better about an entire day. I think it also has this subtext message of saying, hey, you know, even the little things that you do that you don't think are much, you know, even if it's just, hey, I have some extra tomatoes, I wonder if the neighbor would want any. Can completely change someone's day. Can completely change someone's outlook. Just those little tiny acts of kindness are really what it's all about. You know, just as, like, saying something negative briefly can wreck someone's entire day, saying something positive really briefly could just make someone's day. And I really love this because this person's day was completely made. I love the humor. I love the neighbor. He's just so noncommittal. Like, I just really liked it. I thought the characters were wonderful in here, and the story was wonderful, and it was very, it was executed very well. So, wonderful right, Naomi. I thought it was great. It was very entertaining from beginning to end. Any comments from you, Abiziana?
Yes. This one really cheered me up. I feel like it had such life in it. And like, even when things are going badly for her, she has that snarky humor, like you pointed out. I love how that she responds to the cat. So the cat just yawned and turned away to lick her behind. But the way that she said that in the audio, to lick her behind, like, it was just, there was this, like, funny resentment to it. And I can see that because sometimes, like, I don't have a pet currently, but there have been times when I have, and it's like, if you're really lonely and you're like, oh, at least I have, you know, this little creature that I love, and then the cat just, like, doesn't give a crap that you're there. And it's like, okay, even if he doesn't love me. There's something about, like, that cat turning away that just, it's funny but sad at the same time. And then the old man, I picture him, like, on Up, the guy whose house floats, the older guy, he just, I don't know, I picture him like that. He's so cute, in like a grumpy old man kind of way. And the idea of him gifting this and making her want to give something too, really fits with the theme of the broken hold up the broken, because, you know, maybe he realized to a certain extent that she might be someone who needed something, who needed a little bit of connection, who maybe didn't have what she needed today, even though he didn't realize it was her birthday. And then it made her realize that this grumpy old neighbor might be someone who needs something, too, to cheer him up, because look how grumpy he is even when he's being nice, and maybe he needs something to enjoy. And the two broken, lonely neighbors end up helping each other have positive experiences. So I thought this was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, agreed. I like the idea that she decided, you know, that the neighbor maybe needs some cheering up as well, because he does seem like a bit of a sour puss himself. So that was a great observation. What do we have up next, the baby Adam?
We have one by Nick Wald, if you'll read that for us.
Absolutely. This is Recognition by Nick Wald. No simple passing nod today as I tack onto the queue for my extra shot large latte bought before the train is due. A smile of recognition that we both are here each day for a caffeine boost before we head off on our separate ways. I recognize that look you see, that cloud behind your smile, that secret sadness deep within I've known for quite a while. And though you try to hide it, well, it's written there in your eyes, the same eyes that the mirror shows to me. So come, my friend, let's take our cups to sit upon that train, and while the journey lasts, we'll talk of sorrow and of pain. Then at our destination, maybe we both can say that we feel a little stronger and hold on another day. End pull. Ah, I love the cadence to this. The rhyme worked really well, but the cadence to it was fantastic. I don't know if it's iambic pentameter. I haven't, like, tried to break it down while reading it, but the flow feels that way. You know, it feels a lot like, especially that last stanza, so come, my friend, let's take our cuffs to sit upon that train, feels very Lewis Carroll with the walrus, just the phrasing of it and the cadence of it. I also love the story of it, you know. No simple passing nod today. Little thing. You know, you walk by the same person every day, and you both have your coffees every day, and you do that little nod that just says, hey, as you look at each other. And you get on the train and it goes to work, but there's no simple passing nod today. And just that one little indicator, you know, is like, oh, things are a little worse than they usually are, when the narrator is clearly aware of the fact that it's always not that great, because every day you see the sadness in their eyes, the secret sadness that they've known for quite a while. And to finally take that step, so let's get on the train, and this time let's talk. You know, let's chit-chat, and let's be there for each other so that we can, you know, help each other out, like, to get through it, to just have a way to talk. I thought it was really well done, and that excellent cadence and rhyme, I think, gave the poem a lot of character and a lot of flow. So I thought this was a good write that, while a serious concept, made more accessible to the reader, thanks What did you think, Susanna?
I think you're right that form can make it accessible in a way that, even though it is touching and emotional, it's like a more palatable pain because it's written with such a great flow that, like, it feels like it could be like in a musical or something. It has that cadence, and you read it really well. So sometimes it's like, did it read so well because of the reader or because of the writing? And I think it has to be that both, like that combination where it's written in such a way that you can just pick it up. I think this was amazing. In the first stanza, it just shows the power of an acquaintance, like how you can matter to someone who maybe you don't even realize fully notices you, but there is that recognition. Even if they only have that little smile, that little nod, they matter to each other. They notice when they're gone. And then that second stanza is what really hit me in the heart. They're in your eyes, the same eyes that the mirror shows to me. He recognizes that same sadness in himself, in this person. And I find that people who feel a lot of pain do tend to have more empathy. I had this one coworker for a while. She's not working with me anymore, but she has chronic pain. And whenever anyone is in pain, she immediately knows, like she can just pick it up. And she'll look in your eye and she'll be like, oh, what hurts today? She can just see it. And I think it's because she feels it. And I just thought about her when I read that line, and how some people are really good at that. So that shows the connection with the contest, the broken holding the broken. I love that in the final stanza, they decide to go together and express themselves and help each other through the day. Hold on another day. You know, it's not an unrealistic, everything's going to be fine now, but it's like, we can get through this day together. It's a very touching piece.
Yeah, I really, a lot of respect too for your coworker. You know, some people just have that elevated emotional intelligence. And I think when you can write about that kind of emotional intelligence, you probably have some of it. You know, if you know to look for those subtle details that sometimes you can just see in a person's face. But it's not one thing everyone can do. Like, not everybody has, I don't know, that awareness. And I don't mean that, like, you know, negatively, like, how dare you not have this awareness? I think it's just an empathetic emotional skill. I think the author has that too, and so does your former coworker. So I really liked that comment. Where are we off to?
Awesome. Now we have one by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Game of Survival. Arctic winters bring screaming reality to the ninth layer of Dante's dream. Empty, shelterless wastelands of blowing white death, kingdom of polar bear might, and cubs born to innocent bliss, a drifting playground of slides and climbs, till lone wolf fangs does innocence meet, a lesson written in blood-red script. Love brings survival well beyond the self, with a mother's rampaging growl, and sends the white wolf back to the seventh circle. Scarred from endless frozen wars, starved from torturous empty terrain, mother and child pilgrimaging leads to ocean bounty. Patience, waiting, with ice that hides, and the prize of a secret entrance. Sometimes I am cold. Sub-zero days traveling from car to house, the wake of a winter storm, and the brief glimpse into true nature with unburying of my possessions. And it is then I think of the fur seal, simple creature, overlooked in the annals of animal warriors, just another species to entice public TV viewers, yet under frozen ice it thrives, a realm in which I would perish from a cold as sharp as blades of legend before I could think of why. And the endless darkness that could teach fear to the Grim Reaper, swimming frantically to find the end, unceasingly frigid waters, murky, cloudy darkness, an hour or more, and each breath out becomes a calling for death. And that wonderful, magical burst of sunshine of which the seal finds hypnosis. Just above is the warming sun, unlimited air, but what else? The scars on its head, a reminder of the white claws of death. Heart weakened from emptying lungs, body painful with desperation. Endurance for life stabs fear through the heart with a desperate, determined blade. And polar bear and seal meet in the cruel and torturous game of survival. And I lie in bed, blanket upon blanket, heater ablaze, humidifier soothing, lights comforting, refrigerator full, closet stuffed, and I wish for happiness in this cruel and unfair world. End poem.
Great read, Aphasiana. I loved this poem. You just start us off, like, straight to the chill. Arctic winters bring screaming reality to the ninth layer of Dante's dream. You know, being hell, of course. And just how the icy bleakness of it. And we start immediately with, like, a polar bear attacking, you know, cubs, attacking baby seals, you know, and the protectiveness of a mother, and the struggle to continue to live. And then we're brought into, you know, his reality. Sometimes I am cold, you know, trudging to and from the house and uncovering the car. But then he thinks about the seal and how ridiculous it kind of casts the light of his own quote-unquote struggle, you know, comparatively. You know, no one considers the fur seal some, you know, crazy warrior, some, you know, beast to contend with. And yet, when it comes to life or death, the predator doesn't always win. You know, there is escape, there is survival, there are scars. And so it has enough fight to escape. And while living in a really kind of bleak and chilly environment, you know, that certainly humans would not want to be in, you know, and they are used as lures to get views because they're adorable, you know, they're cute and they're furry and they're sweet, you know, which, by the way, also that furriness gets them killed a lot too by us. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. And then that last bit, you know, and I lie in bed, you know, all comfy with all the creature comforts that humanity has provided for itself. And this is a wish for happiness in this cruel and unfair world. And I love that last stanza because it's ambiguous. You know, is the person still unhappy about their own scenario? You know, like, are they unhappy and feeling bleak and kind of poo-pooing on their own emotions because they're like, well, it could be so much worse, and yet I'm still so unhappy, which I think is the most likely scenario, honestly, for this poem, but I do find it a bit self-judgmental. You know, sometimes I find people frequently that there are no bad emotions. There are negative emotions, but there aren't bad emotions. Like, it's okay to be angry. It's okay to be depressed. It's okay to be unhappy. It's okay to be sad. Those are all fine. They're part of the human experience. They're not bad. Feel them. I think it's important to feel them. I think you learn a lot from yourself that way. And I worry a little bit in this poem about the narrator, you know, just being really kind of hard on themselves, you know, like, when kids don't want to eat dinner, and it's like, there's children starving in Africa, and it's like, okay, but me eating or not eating dinner is, like, inconsequential for that scenario. So
I enjoyed that. But then I also got, like, a secondary kind of alternate interpretation of this, and because I imagine also the person to be laying in bed and thinking about the seal, you know? And they're wishing for happiness in the cruel and unfair world that isn't necessarily cruel and unfair to them, you know? And it can be more of an empathy thing, wishing for happiness of people who have it worse. And I think it works both ways. So anyway, I thought it was an interesting and complex poem, and I love that it captures, you know, both like a person's personal experience, but also a propensity for empathy, and even animals, you know, outside of themselves. So I really liked it. I thought it was a great write. So, thank you, Daniel. What did you think of Aziana?
I loved it. I think that it shows so many different sides of things, because he's thinking about the predators and he's thinking about the prey, and like it's one of those things where it's like, I remember as a kid watching the Nature Channel and not knowing who to cheer for, because, like, it depends on how it's portrayed. Sometimes you're like, run for the animals who are about to get eaten. But then if you watch, like, the polar bear story of, like, how it's starving to death, then you're like, oh, I hope it catches something. So it's like there's all different sides of it. And I feel like he captures that, where each one of them is a survivor in their own way. And captures the harshness of it. And then the contrast with the humans, I think he does call us out on our privilege of, you know, sometimes I have to walk from the car to the house and it's cold. I mean, it's true. It's so many people whine about it. And often not the ones who actually have to spend the most time in it. You know, there are people who don't have homes who are cold at that all the time, and yet we complain when we have to be outside shoveling. I mean, I've been whining for a week that my back is sore. So I mean, like, I'm guilty of such things. I think that I love the line, a realm in which I would perish. So he points out, like, these little seals who seem like all cute and innocent survive in a circumstance that would kill us. And just the way he says it, a realm in which I would perish, it makes it sound like they're like this fantasy warrior, like surviving in this realm that would destroy a meager human. And it just shows that everyone has like their own strength, and the seal, as much as it's defenseless against a lot of things, does survive in a lot of harsh environments. So this shows so many different perspectives and really shows a lot of empathy. But at the end, I think he's again calling us out for the privilege, calling himself out. I find he does that a lot, of like, I'm in bed, I'm comfortable, and I'm angry at the world for, you know, being a little too cruel and wishing that we could be happy in it, and showing that, like, there is a safety here, there is a warmth that other creatures don't have, and yet we are still longing for more. We aren't satisfied by that. But I think it also is recognizing the cruelty towards all those other things, because he seems like he is empathetic to that based on his writing. So it's both. I think it's both of your interpretations. This is fantastic, Daniel. I'm a big fan of his poetry.
Yeah, I really like this piece as well. It is kind of wry. It's a bit wry and dark humor, but also very serious. And also, in some ways, educational. So it's a very multifaceted piece. I liked it. I thought it was a great write. What do we have up now?
Now we have one by Alex Bundy. Would you read that one?
Absolutely.
This is The Demons That Haunt My Dream by Alex Mundy. Everyone in their life has had a huge fear. For some, these fears drive them to tears, haunting them in their brains by the hour, wondering what gave it so much power. My fear is pretty complex, you see, because my fear is of the demons that haunt my dream. Now, these aren't demons that you normally read about, creatures with wings that rip your organs out. No, these are demons that haunt my past, the demons that will haunt me till my last. These demons appeared at an early age, and unfortunately, they are here to stay. They beat me over and over and over again. That's what made me realize they weren't my friends. Judging me constantly for things that I can't control, and every night I thought I was going to explode. Explode in tears that could fill up the sea, all because of the pain they put inside of me. I thought I was in the wrong all of the time, thinking I could change who I was for the next time. The next time they would try and push me to the ground, I told myself I won't let them keep me down. Even with my newfound courage, they would still find a way to torture and bruise me, to ruin my day, constantly what I was doing wrong, to constantly get broken, like in a sad song. I started to question if this would be my life, a life of pain, remorse, torture, and strife. I would dream of what it would be like to be free in this pain in my reality. And some nights I just had to ask if all the suffering would ever pass. But what I would soon realize is that when the pain would end is when I would truly die. One night when I thought I couldn't take any more, suddenly the floodgates would open even more. What I thought would be my happiest days ended up bringing the most pain. When the demons in my life have finally left, what I thought would be pure bliss ended up being a mountain of stress. When the gates of freedom finally opened wide, I didn't know what to do, so all I did was hide. I hid from the world, feeling so alone. So much of the world to me felt unknown. When the ones who were actually there got up and left, it dawned on me that this was the true test. I finally had my own wings, which I had the right to use, to protect those who are being so abused. Those who ended up having nowhere to go, I had to be for them, there for them, no matter how much they would undergo, because I have my demons, and they've done their damage. Now I have to make sure that other people can manage. End poem. And this is a pretty dark write, to say, hey, I've been through a lot, the demons are like past trauma, it sounds like being abused as a child and then being like pushed down to adulthood and realizing that it's sink or swim. And the fright of that when you're completely unprepared, when you haven't been given like the support or emotional tools to know how to cope with that. Can be very frightening, and the fact that they're still haunted, that they're still very aware of the fact that this trauma hasn't just left them, it's not like, oh, well, I'm an adult now, so we're good, this isn't happening anymore. Well, no, because the emotional scars continue, there's marks on who you are, and the way that you process and heal that. There's like that astounding empathy at the end of looking out for others and to see what you can do to prevent yourself happening to other people. Although there's some part of me here that reads that and thinks, take care of yourself. not that I don't want someone to think of other people, but I don't know, I guess like there's some kind of weird instinctual mama bear in me that's like, don't overextend yourself. It's not your job as a victim to prevent other people from being victimized. Like, yeah, help out if you can, but, don't martyr yourself for a cause because you feel responsible because you were also a victim, if that makes sense. Although, that's just me reading into the piece of it. It's not actually what the piece is about. It's just kind of where it pushes me emotionally. It's like my own visceral emotional response to it. But great, you know, the narrator in this piece, I mean, the level and degree of abuse that's kind of pointed out here in terms of these demons, you know, they don't even consider them people in any way. Never, any time are they referred to as human at any point, I think really spells out, you know, like the emotional like level that the person is on, like the way that they consider them. It almost feels like a bit of dissociation, you know, to make it almost like a fantastical story, to kind of separate, you know, oneself from the reality. I find this a very interesting piece. I could probably spend some time picking at it and thinking at it from, like, a psychological perspective. No idea, you know, obviously, if the author went through any of this, but, you know, it could just be a narration. But if they have a, you know, greater sympathy here, this sounds horrible. So I thought this was a very emotional write. It was very dark, you know, kind of following this kind of plotting rhyme scheme as they take us along to, like, the horrors of their childhood and the additional trauma of becoming an ill-equipped adult. So, anyway, I thought it was a great write. It's a dark write. You know, it's very contemplative for me on an emotional level. What did you think, Tatiana?
Yeah, I think it's powerful. It definitely is dark, and you know, it's disturbing that anyone would be treated like this. It's so devastating that the impact that things can have later on in life. I like when he's talking about how at the end it seemed like the gates finally opened wide, but he didn't know what to do. So that made me think of, like, maybe graduating from the high school where you were bullied or something like that, and it's like, now it's your chance to go out in the world and be, like, away from all this. But what do you do? Where do you go? You feel limited by the way that you were treated. It reminds me a lot of the poem To This Day by Shane Coscan. I can never say his name. It's about the lasting impact of being bullied. And it's actually used at a lot of, like, anti-bullying assemblies and stuff, but this is like a whole other level of it, where it's so such a dark experience that he's just haunted in this poem, and it's the end, I think, is full of hope, because there are two different kinds of people who've had terrible lives, and it's generally like either they're like, well, I didn't have anything, so you can't either. Or they're, I'm going to make sure everyone doesn't go through what I did, and I want to be the person who I wish that I had. And it seems like the narrator, if not the poet, is that second option of wanting to help people. And I think that that's a beautiful response to it. Well done, Alex.
Yeah, wonderful, right? I enjoyed it. It was dark, but it was well done. What do we have up now?
Now we have one by Robert J. Tice, if my computer will cooperate. I might have to get you to put it up. I'm frozen. I'm sorry. If you look on the topic board, it's right underneath the one by Alex. You can just transfer that over to the group.
Yeah, give me a second.
I know you just read, but I think I'm going to have to get you to again because I'm stuck.
All right.
Not a problem.
It's all goodness up here. Alright. This is Building the Ark of Love by Robert J. Tice. Confusion floods, then drowns the hours, and anything we held was ours splits and drifts off surge of dread and doubt's most fervent urge to perish in uncertainty. An ocean of perplexity swells and crashes reason's beach, surpasses sandbags, soon will reach these hills where lasting hopes retreat, and disbelief brings self-defeat, as answers sink behind the tide. But now, with nowhere left to hide, let's band together here and fast, preserve the future through the past, recalling fate, how to survive. Believe we can and must revive the beauty, justice, trust, and peace that only thrives once we release our eyes from color, hearts from hate, cause from warfare, choice from fate. Why brood, presuming tragedy, when we could use our unity to craft an ark of love to save our goodness from an early grave? We have the hammers, wood, and nails. Assemble, friends, so truth prevails. End of poem. I enjoyed the uplifting message in here, you know, building the ark of love. It almost kind of says, oh, this is going to take a really religious tone, but it doesn't really. I mean, it's not religious, if that makes sense, but it's also not, you know, it doesn't delve into the biblical on some deep level. But I really love the allegory that's made from it. You know, confusion floods that drowns the hours. You know, as you lose things you thought were yours, and there's pain and there's just like trauma, you know, and the way that that attacks a person, you know, an ocean of perplexity swells and crashes, reason's beach surpasses sandbags, soon will reach, you know, just the wearing down at the edges, the eating away at certainty and at, you know, things that you thought were solid. I'm kind of starting to nip at the edges of hope. So I really like the concept of the flooding, being like an emotional flooding or a traumatic flooding, but that, you know, but now with nowhere left to hide, let's band together here and to fast, preserve the future through the past. You know, if we work together, we can get through it. You know, whatever kind of flood it is, you know, just unity will help us all get through, you know, believe, and we must arrive, you know, all of the good things we can preserve, from hate, from warfare, all of those things. So I really loved that. And then the really strong, like, call at the end, you know, we have the hammers, we have wood, we have nails, you know, all the tools that we need are here. So let's do it. I thought it was really inspiring and really uplifting, and I thought this works really well with the kind of the story of the Ark, if you want to look at it from a religious sense, but also just from like a getting through hard times, you know, via hard work and unity. So that was a really uplifting piece and a wonderful write from Robert. Ephesia, are you back with us? Got your computer going?
Slowly, but yes. I got to listen to you, and then partway through, I got to read along. So I'm catching up. I really enjoyed the second stanza. An ocean of perplexity swells and crashes. Reason's beach. The emotions can sometimes overtake reason in a good way. I for the most part, I think I'm a mix of things, but I like logic. I like to have a a reasoning of things, but at the same time, sometimes your empathy and your feelings need to matter more. You know, sometimes I bend the rules to allow someone to have access to something or something. You know, I tend to not be very strict at work because I'm like, but, you know, that kid can't afford the $2, so I'm just going to give you a new library card and pretend that didn't happen.
Sometimes expectations maybe not realistic.
Yeah. Exactly. I really liked that the way it's described as the waves there, like you had mentioned that there's that flooding, gets past the sandbags and takes over. The ants are sink behind the tide. I mean, answers are important. I would not, like, you know, throw away science. But at the same time, I think that this has a beautiful look at preserving love and caring and beauty and justice and trust and peace. Those are all things worth hanging on to. So I think that this is a beautiful piece.
Yeah, I think it's gorgeous as well. Yeah, just, I don't know, I think it has some really good emotionality to it. So I thought it was a wonderful write. What do we have now?
Now we have one by Katrina, and I'll give that a read. The Story of Me and Joe by Katrina. Assessing the damage. It's only material, Joe says. We've suffered the storm. It's time to rebuild. It's best to head east onto the higher ground, closer to sunlight and warmth. We'll plant our seeds and hope for a harvest of plenty come autumn. Through the wreck and the refuse, he picks up a random forget-me-not. He says to remember that this is the first of the best of our better days. The moonlight's a path for us, hobbling but holding, one onto the other, two a tourniquet between life and obscurity. We move on. End poem.
Right. I enjoyed this piece. You know, just that opening, assessing the damage. It's only material, Joe says. You know, letting, and I think that's a great message, you know, if, especially like in natural disasters or things like that, you know, the important things really are like, is the other person okay? Everything else can be replaced, you know, but if, you know, people are still alive, then it's not really so bad. You know, economists might beg to differ, but I value human life a bit more than stuff. And I think that's, you know, the message here. You know, we've suffered the storm and it's time to rebuild, and we can do this. You know, plant the seeds and hope for a harvest of plenty come autumn. You know, start now. Little things now turn into great things later, you know, a little bit at a time. And so I really liked this. I thought it was a great message, and it's a sweet little story, you know, about just the aftermath of a disaster of some kind. You know, and to call the day following, you know, some kind of horrific event, you know, to stop and pick a flower and say, this is the first and the best of our better days, you know, to say it's all uphill from here. I think it's pretty remarkable. You know, that kind of optimism is something you see on a regular basis. So I really like that, you know, and then them just walking together into the moonlight. I think, you know, just really reinforces their relationship with each other. So I thought this was a short but sweet piece. From Katrina. What did you think, Bisiana?
I love the last stanza. Hobbling but holding, one onto the other, two on a tourniquet. It's hobbling but holding for some reason just really got to me. It's like to have and to hold in wedding vows, but hobbling but holding. You know, if it's like a three-legged race almost where, you know, everybody's missing one part, but you can do it. Wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. I'm trying to picture, like, when you do it, always because you tie your legs together in the middle, I'm like, wait a minute, they're both not.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm questioning myself now. But it's just, like, it's that unevenness of, like, if you're both unsteady, but if you're holding each other and it becomes steady, I just thought that was a beautiful concept there, and she words it really nicely. And I like what you said about the flower and taking that moment to say, like, this is the beginning of the good. So, awesome.
Yeah.
Well done, Katrina.
It was a great,
and that was
right?
The first time I think she's ever entered one of my contests. So it's nice to have a new face.
What? I like new faces. Where are we going now?
Now there's one by R.G. Kamal, if you can read that.
Absolutely. This is Survival by R.G. Kamal. Goes like this. The weak and the broken need to lean on each other. This makes them collectively strong, bundle of thin, weak twigs. End poem. I enjoyed this. Like, it's a brevity for sure, and it's a nice statement, but I find it compact and interesting. You know, the weak and the broken need to lean on each other. This makes them collectively strong, like a big bundle of thin, weak twigs. You know, just the idea of together we can become something greater than ourselves. It's like, you know, greater than the sum of parts. You know, everybody's flawed. It's, you don't have to be just the weak and the broken leaning on each other, because in some respect, every person out there qualifies as the weak or the broken. And I don't know of anyone, at least in my experience, who's had absolutely nothing bad or traumatic happen to them ever. If you're out there, good on you, because life. So I really love this concept, because to me it just says, you know, humanity together, people together, are so much stronger than we are alone. And it is so true. We can accomplish great things together. We work hand in hand. And I liked the concept of viewing everyone as a little twig or a branch of some kind that's all kind of rafted together to make something great. So I really liked this. Although when I read Lean on Each Other, and this is more about me than it is about the poem, really, I pictured when I was a kid and I used to start fires in the fireplace, building that little kindling teepee. But I don't think we should light us on fire, you know. just kind of where my mind goes with that imagery, just based on my own personal experience. But I thought this was a wonderful brevity. What did you think, Fabiana?
I think, Babbler, you should not set the world on fire. But
just burning the broken and wings over here. No. If that's the case, throw me on the stack.
All right. I thought this was a great ending. Like you said, the concept of the big bundle of thin, weak twigs, and how when they're put together, they're strong. It's such a good concept of us needing each other, and as a community, we gain strength. It's a beautiful message.
Yeah, I agree, Dad. I think it's a beautiful message. Yeah. Straightforward, but sweet.
Mm-hmm. It's a good brevity.
What do we have up
there? Oh. We have one by Pam Ray, and I had been saving this because she said she might call, but we're approaching the last 15 minutes, so I'm thinking it's safe to say she fell asleep, which is okay. Pam needs her rest. And I often fall asleep during her late show, so I understand. And that's no way a reflection on the show that I fall asleep. It's just that's what I do in general. You know, sleep when I'm not supposed to and not sleep when I am supposed to. That's generally how it goes. This is The Stability of Shared Experiences by Pam Ray. Through this land of burnt clay, we drag ourselves, ragdolls, in a journey of suffering. Hands held together, intertwining spirits, we struggle to find ourselves in the murky caverns of fossils. I shall call you my hope, offering to you fragments of myself to lean upon. We have made a mockery of those who tried to drag us down. The rain comes forth, a salvation of teardrops, in a savage scream. We rise to the song of sawdust, a creation of antiquity. Every small victory appears in wondrous form, offering the stability of a shared experiences.
Great read. Faziana, I enjoyed that. I really loved the imagery in this. It's absolutely beautiful. The message is really great, too. You know, just like sticking it out together. But the imagery is really, I think, what makes this piece powerful. You know, just to start it with, like, through this land of burnt clay. So they're immediately taken to this image, you know, where we drag ourselves, ragdolls, in a journey of suffering. You know, the idea that life, ragdolls dragging themselves through, like, a journey of burnt clay suffering, you know. It's a really powerful image that, you know, brings a lot to mind. It's also, you know, kind of a bleak outlook on life, but it's so effective for me as an image, you know, but together, you know, hands held together, you know, just not alone. And I like the stanza, I shall call you my hope, offering to you fragments of myself to lean upon. You know, to acknowledge that the other person is your hope, they're what keep you going, they're what keep you breathing and on the grind. And yet you're offering them fragments of yourself to lean upon, damage to yourself to keep the other going. I really loved that, you know, like, you are my hope, I mean, something outside of myself to give, you know, parts of yourself to keep someone else alive. I think there's a beautiful sentiment in that. And just, again, it's kind of, for me, it's the imagery of pulling from yourself to give someone else. And then the second to last stanza, the rain comes forth, a salvation of teardrops in a savage scream. I loved that line. Just the salvation of teardrops, just that raw, kind of unfiltered pain. I thought it was really beautiful. You know, we rise to the song of sawdust, a creation of antiquity. You know, the hard work, the making, you know, the creation of antiquity. In order for anything to become an antique, in order for anything to become a past, it has to be done. It has to be worked out and worked through. So I thought that was beautiful as well. And then every small victory appears in wondrous form, offering stability of shared experiences. You know, we did this together. There's a piece of me that wonders if it's childbirth, you know, if it's the making of a person, you know, hands held together, intertwining spirits, struggling to find ourselves, you know, and leaning on each other so heavily, and then this painful rain comes forth with the power of creation that joins them together even more in a wondrous form of shared experiences. They're living together as two people, which I think works well for this poem as well. but also just the idea of creating, you know, the next generation together and sharing in that experience of parenthood and giving rise. So I really enjoyed this piece. I thought it was wonderful. It was very powerful. The imagery in it was beautifully done. So who knows, Pam? What did you think of Paisiana?
I really enjoyed it. I like your interpretation there. I hadn't thought of that thing of seeing it as parenthood, but that makes sense. You have the eye. I don't know. I'm slacking lately. I don't see it until you say it, and I'm like, oh yes. I loved the third stanza. I shall call you my hope, offering to you fragments of myself to lean upon. I know you touched on that stanza as well, but it's just it blew me away. The idea that this person is the hope holding her together, and yet she's giving pieces of herself that's barely held together because she wants to hold them up too. And I think that captures the prompt in itself, like that. That stanza could be its own poem, but it's even better because it has all the rest of it. Just beautiful writing, Pam, as always. Pam can make everything amazing. I've never seen her write a poem that I wasn't like, yeah, that's awesome. She just naturally makes every prompt work. So, Pam, I hope you're having a wonderful night. Now, that is the last of the ones for this contest. I was going to do some carryovers, but actually it's just about the end of the show, so I think the carryovers that were from Double Helix will be carried over to Double Helix, which is the show on Thursday with the Duke of St. Paul, Dex Bailey. We do have a contest for that show as well, which is quotes from the author John Green. My thoughts are stars, I cannot phantom into constellations. I just give myself permission to suck. I find this hugely liberating. I am not in the business of denying myself the simple pleasures of saying true things. John Green just knows what to say. So be inspired by him and write for Thursday's show, Double Helix. If you look in allpoetry.com and Late Night Poets, there's a list of contests. There are many for the shows, which there's a show every night, sometimes two a night. So there's always something going on. You can support the shows by going to amazon.com and buying the Late Night Poets anthologies. And many of our poets individually have things published. And Babbler, did you have any closing remarks? Oh, your contest is up. Why don't you tell us about your contest?
Yeah, so my contest is up for this show as well. It's based on the book, The Midnight Library, which is one of my favorite books. I really like books that leave me thinking at the end and kind of reconsidering my worldview and my outlook, and this is really one of those books, but it's a surprisingly easy read. It's really interwoven with a lot of larger philosophical concepts. I really recommend it to anyone who wants to read it, but for the purpose of this contest, I have pulled out some quotes from the book that I found particularly interesting. There are six quotes. I'll just read through them real quick. So prompt one is, the paradox of volcanoes was that they were symbols of destruction, but also life. Once the lava flows and cools, it solidifies and then breaks down over time to become soil, rich, fertile soil. She wasn't a black hole, she decided. She was a volcano. And like a volcano, she couldn't run away from herself. She'd have to stay there, intent to that wasteland. She could plan a forest inside of herself. Two is, a person was like a city. You couldn't let a few less desirable parts put you off the whole. There may be bits you don't like, a few dodgy side streets and suburbs, but the good stuff makes it worthwhile. And the next prompt was, we only need to be one person. We only need to feel one existence. We don't have to do everything in order to be everything, because we are already infinite. While we are alive, we always contain a future of multifarious possibilities. Prompt four, Sometimes just to say your own truth out loud is enough to find others like you. Prompt 5, it is quite a revelation to discover that the place you wanted to escape to is the exact same place you escaped from, that the prison wasn't the place, but the perspective. And the last prompt, prompt 6, when you stay too long in a place, you forget just how big an expanse the world is. You get no sense of the length of those longitudes and latitudes, just as, she supposed, it is hard to have a sense of the vastness inside of any one person. But once you sense that vastness, once something reveals it, hope emerges, whether you want it to or not, and it clings to you as stubbornly as lichen clings to rock. So those are the quotes. I really love this book, so I hope that other people are inspired by the quotes that I picked. And again, I really encourage people to get out of the place.
Yes, those are amazing quotes. I'm, like, super pumped. You know, I haven't read it yet, but people keep recommending it to me. So I have to put that higher on my to-be-read list because I love those quotes. So who knows? Maybe I'll read it this week. Let's see if I'm actually a responsible human. I get lost on All Poetry, and I start reading the poems, and then I have not been reading my pile of books.
Yeah, it happens. This one is
an excellent,
surprisingly quick read. It's a surprisingly quick read. Yeah, it goes fast. It's not a toughie at all, but it's intense. Like, you'll be thinking about it for days.
So. That's what I've heard. a few of my coworkers read it, and they're like, "Give yourself some emotional space after." I'm like, "What?" And they're like, "Yeah, you're just gonna need to like sit there and think."
Yes, it's a lot of processing, but it's not a long read itself.
Cool. I'm excited for the show inspired by it. I think we're going to get some great poems in response to those prompts. Thank you, everyone, who wrote for this week's show. Thank you, Babbler, for being my awesome co-host. Thank you, Phil, for giving us this time on the channel, Late Night Poets. And thank you, Kevin, for allpoetry.com. It's been a great experience, and I look forward to seeing you all again next week.
All right. And thank you, Faziana, as well, for being our wonderful hostess.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.